I am really thankful to be here this morning to have the opportunity to speak with you, and I've been looking forward to the time that I could stand up and say thank you to this congregation. We have been blessed by this congregation, and this is a blessed congregation. We speak of you often to those around us. We've had many conversations with people about the things that we've received from you, but and after the lesson this morning, after services, I'd be glad to tell you more about school. There's so much that I wish that I could tell you that goes on there and the things that we do, but I wouldn't have time to even cover all of that and still give even a minute of a lesson. But we received in the mail a care package of sorts from the congregation here, I think from the ladies group, that was, if I'm correct, in response to my wife's birthday. And that really touched my wife. The care package included things like pens and pencils and little tablets, little rainbow-colored tablets, which I use on a daily basis and get made fun of for having the frilly colors. But that really touched her. There are people that support us financially, but to know that there are people here in Grants Pass that are really behind us as a family and really supporting us has really made a big difference in our struggle and in our striving in Lubbock, Texas. Also, in Lubbock, Texas, I have been struggling and striving, and George made mention of some of the results of that. I've been working hard to make your efforts not in vain, that your support of us would be a worthy support. And I am glad to say that I've been doing well in class to this point. That's enough said about that. I'll speak some more about that with any questions that you might have about school and that sort of thing. I would love to answer them. When I came to Lubbock, Texas, I expected to find men there that knew what they were talking about, teachers that could describe to me what it was I wanted to learn. I was not surprised at all to find men who were very studied in the scriptures, who knew what they were talking about. And I was not shocked to find out that there were men there that could really express themselves well, that could really get across their lesson. And for that matter, there's men there that not only do they know the word and they're good at teaching the word, but they're good at living the word. They're men of character. They've really given their lives to God. One thing I was shocked to find out was that the men who teach there have to raise support to be teachers, just as students have to travel around and find support to be students. And that shocked me, because these men could be working at congregations of great size and hauling in salaries that would make them very comfortable positions. But they've chosen to commit themselves to teaching the word through other men. That really surprised me. I talked to many of them and found out that they don't have any more funds as teachers necessarily than we have as students. And it reminded me of a passage in 2 Corinthians, chapter 8 and verse 5, where Paul is speaking about the Macedonians and their generosity in giving out of their poverty and even above and beyond their ability. And in chapter 8 and verse 5 of 2 Corinthians, he writes this: "And this, not as we had expected, but they first gave themselves to the Lord and to us by the will of God." You see, the men there at Sunset, that is their entire purpose, is that they have given themselves to God for the service of the Lord. And they really believe, by training other men, that they can have a greater effect, even beyond their own ability, in the Lord's kingdom, by multiplying their skills, by multiplying their knowledge, and by just multiplying the amount of people that are out there teaching and preaching. When I consider the fact that they had given themselves so completely to the service of God, it brought me back to Acts chapter 2, of verses 41 through 47. And that is the scripture that I'd like to speak on this morning. In this passage of Acts chapter 2, 41 through 47, we see that there's a new church just in its infancy who has just given themselves to Jesus. And I'd like to read the passage starting in 41 through 47 for you of Acts chapter 2. This is the New American Standard Version. So then, those who had received the word were baptized. And that day were added about 3,000 souls. They were continually devoting themselves to the apostles' teaching and to fellowship and to the breaking of bread and to prayer. Everyone kept feeling a sense of awe, and many wonders and signs were taking place through the apostles. And all those who had believed were together and had all things in common. They began selling their property and possessions and were sharing them with all as anyone might have need. Day by day, continuing with one mind in the temple and breaking bread from house to house, they were taking their meals together with gladness and sincerity of heart, praising God and having favor with all the people. And the Lord was adding to their number day by day those who were being saved. This church had just committed themselves to Christ. They were baptized. And now they were committing themselves to each other. It says in verse 43 that they kept feeling a sense of awe. That word awe there can be translated as fear. I think in the New King James it's translated as fear. And the word doesn't necessarily mean that they were afraid completely or that they were awed or awestruck completely, but that they had a sense of reverence, of awesome reverence. I've seen it translated as respect in relationship to men and reverence in relationship to God. An awesome reverence. The entire church. And that reverence or that awesome respect was for the plan of salvation for Christ that they had just committed themselves to. I'd like to bring out 3 points from this passage considering the church and the way that they had committed themselves to Christ. First off, they gave themselves to God by spending time with the church. It says that they were together. Secondly, they committed themselves to God by giving of their possessions to the church. And third, I'd like to speak about their commitment to God by their being of one mind. In verse 43, it says that everyone kept feeling a sense of awe. And then in verse 44, it says, all those who had believed were together. You might say to yourself, well, they had to be together. They didn't have anybody else. This is a group of Jewish people who had been converted to believing that Christ was the Son of God, the very person that they had put upon the cross. They most likely, although this text does not tell us this right here, I suspect that by becoming Christians, they had to leave possibly families, possibly jobs, at least the lifestyle or the religion that they had been following was not going to accept their new decision. And so they had each other. They were a church now. They were a body. And they spent time together. And you might ask yourself, well, what did they talk about? It says here that there were 3,000 people that were added that day. Most likely, one of the things they did talk about was the Jesus that they had just decided to be baptized into the name of. I mean, this was a decision that they had all chosen. It says in verse 42, they devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching. It also says they devoted themselves to fellowship. I imagine they had to spend some time talking to each other, just about each other. I can't think of 3,000 people that I know intimately right off the top of my head. They probably didn't know each other. Many may have traveled to this place. So they probably spent some time getting together just to get to know each other. Remember, the reason they were together was because they had one common purpose, and that was their decision to follow Jesus. They only had each other. There's some comparison today to the church. It's still the same church that it was on that day. We are that same body, and we have each other. We have one common purpose, and that is following Jesus. There is a world around us that does not share the same purpose as we have. And so I would suggest that as these in the very first century spent time together and had all things in common, that we as believers in the same common goal should spend time together and have all things in common. And there was a reason for that. The second thing I'd like to mention to you out of the passage is that they gave themselves to God by giving their possessions to God. And as soon as the preacher mentions that, most who are visiting say, "Whoa, wait a minute, I knew it. There it is. It's just another one of those churches that's looking for my money. They just want me to put all my money in the plate, and then they're going to walk out, and they're not going to care nothing about me." The passage here does not suggest that at all. If you read verse 45, it says they began selling their property and possessions and were sharing them with all, as anyone might have need. It's been suggested, I've heard people saying things to the effect of, well, it must have been like a socialist group of people, kind of like communism. Everybody just distributed evenly. I don't think that this verse really suggests that, but it does say that they gave to those who had needs. Secondly, it was a voluntary decision. It wasn't as though Peter got done preaching, and then as soon as they were baptized, he was standing next to the water saying, "Sign over your house and your checkbook and let me have it." It was a voluntary decision. They gave to anyone who had need. I'll give you an example. Down at school in Lubbock, Texas, there's a lot of men who have come from lots of places of the world, all over the world, to be students. And in doing so, they give up a career, they give up financial stability, I guess is the way to describe it, although I never really felt financially stable where I was at. But they give up some comfort to come to school. There's a man there named John Gallant. He's from the Northeast, somewhere around Massachusetts. And he's got six children. He's in his mid-40s, and he has a wife. And they came down to Lubbock, Texas, to be students. They came there about midterm with not a lot of funding. Sometimes people have a hard time finding the funding. And while he was there, within the first month, his van broke down. The van that hauls around all six of those kids. John was not a man, is not a man, that is not given to telling somebody, "Hey, I need a little help." But he did mention it to one person, and that one person mentioned it to somebody else, and eventually it was announced to the school, to all of the students there, that John needed some help fixing his transmission so that he could get to school, get the kids where they needed to go. And I'm glad to say that I believe through all of the students there, a little bit went a long way from each student, and that his need, I believe, has been met. But I didn't know about it. I had no idea. And I was glad to have the opportunity to consider helping out. But had I not known about it and it had prevented him from being able to continue in school, I would have been crushed. I believe strongly that we need men learning more, and that he's a good man. He's going to be good for the kingdom. But if I had not known about his need and he had to leave, I would have been so hurt by not having the opportunity to help him out. I think we need, as a church, to spend time together with each other to take care of each other's needs. Means that we need to know each other. We need to know what each other's needs are. And the only way we're going to know that is by being together, having all things in common. I'll give you another example. There's a family there named the Crosbys. They're good friends of mine. They're from Florida. His wife, one morning after Sunday service, said, "You know, we don't have a computer. My husband's doing all of his homework by traveling to the library or traveling wherever he can find a place to use a computer that'll print it out, and we just need something to get us by, just something that'll you can type into and that'll print papers out so that he can turn them in." And I knew somebody in the church there that did kind of a hobby out of their garage working on computers. And I asked him, do you have any donations of computers that somebody just was trying to get rid of? And within 5 minutes, they had the promise of a new computer, well, a used computer that had been rebuilt with a printer and all the things that they would need to help them in their striving through school. And that made me feel good. But it made me understand that their comfort level with me was enough that they could say, "Hey, I need some help." And I knew somebody else well enough to say, "Hey, can you give that help?" And I've come to see through the school down there that taking care of needs of others is really important. And taking care of the time to get to know them helps me to take care of those needs. If you look at Matthew chapter 25, beginning about 35 and 36, I often see this passage, or hear this passage talked about, as the separating of the sheep from the goats. And it's a prophecy of Judgment Day. And in verse 35, we see that, I'll read it for you. Verse 35 of Matthew 25. "For I was hungry, and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger, and you invited me in. Naked, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you visited me. I was in prison, and you came to me." And down in verse 40, "The king will answer and say to them, 'Truly, I say to you, to the extent that you did it to one of these brothers of mine, even the least of them, you did it to me.'" Then in verse 41, he continues, "He will say also to those on his left, 'Depart from me, accursed ones, into the eternal fire, which has been prepared for the devil and his angels. For I was hungry, and you gave me nothing to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me nothing to drink.'" And he continues on in the same. It gave me the idea that taking care of needs has eternal consequences. I want to get to know you. I want to get to know your needs, and I want to help take care of those needs. And these people, in Acts chapter 2, they began taking care of each other because they were committed under one common purpose. In verse 46, and the third and last point that I'm going to bring up, it says they day by day they continued with one mind in the temple. That word there that says one mind is not trying to say that they had to all gather together just to have enough intellect to make one mind, or that it took five Sunset students just to get one thought, but that they had one passion. The word, I kind of looked it up after taking some Greek studies and been quite interested in it, the way these things are translated. That one mind could have been translated one passion. They had one common passion, and that was Jesus. It says that they continued with sincerity and gladness of heart in that one passion. And then in verse 47, they praised God. And they had favor with all the people. I'm not sure whether that word, all the people, or that phrase there means all the people that had just been converted to Christ, or all the people. But it's conceivable, at least at this time, that they had favor with those who saw them. I would suggest to you that if we continue in one mind, with one passion, and we love each other and treat each other as one body and one family and take care of each other, there are going to be those who are going to notice. That world that revolves around us is going to see that. The last part of this, verse 47, says that the Lord was adding to their number day by day those who were being saved. I would say that that wasn't that God was pushing people into the church, but that somehow those that were being saved came into contact with the message, came into contact with the gospel, came into contact with somebody who was part of that body. Maybe they saw the love that was occurring in that church. Maybe it caused them to ask, what's going on there? I would also suggest to you that if we don't love each other, if we don't take care of each other's needs, in fact, if we go to the other end of the spectrum and begin to divide ourselves, they're going to notice that too. And that's not going to attract them to the Lord. So I would suggest, at least from the example I see here, that we need to spend time together. We need to get to know each other. And we need to know the needs so that we can take care of those needs. That by loving each other and taking care of each other, we might be example to those around us. That they might be drawn to that. That might be something that they want to grab hold of also. That they might be added to the church. George mentioned that we'll be singing a song of encouragement. Sometimes that's called a song of invitation. This morning, I would encourage you, if you have come this morning and you have needs, make those needs known. If you haven't taken the opportunity to tell somebody, that's what we want to hear as a family, is what can we do for you? If you have the need of knowing more about the gospel, knowing more about Jesus, the one that these had a common purpose, that common goal, that's what I've committed myself to. I've committed to learning more about Him so that I might teach others about Him. That is what I want to know. I want to know that need so that I might help fulfill it. And if you have the need to just get some obstacle out of your way that has kept you from fellowshipping with the church, something that has kept you from getting to know your brothers and sisters, from getting to know their needs, make that known, because we're committed to helping with that also. Take the opportunity while we sing this song of encouragement.